Stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Inyart with our Denver Bible Church update. We had fun yesterday at our Christmas celebration service. We really had a good time. And during the sermon, we had great worship and the kids sang. They sang a couple Christmas carols and said their verses, the little kids. It was fun. And then during the sermon, we gave the evidence that Jesus Christ, when he was born 2,000 years ago, that he really was our creator, God the Son, and the Savior who died and rose from the dead. So we celebrated his birth, but then we gave people evidence, the reasons to believe the story. That's not just mythology. The Bible's not written like a Greek myth. It's written as though it were an accurate history, and then we could test it and check it out and evaluate the evidence. Well, let's see. Now to get back to the Denver Bible Church update from last week. Last week we were looking at Matthew chapter 15, and we saw that a Canaanite woman, a Gentile woman, came to Jesus and asked him, she was desperate, and asked him for help. But she wasn't Jewish. She was a Canaanite. And so after she said, "Oh Lord, Son of David," and she begged him, "Have mercy on me." She needed help for her daughter. What Jesus' response was that he ignored her. He ignored her. Well, because she wasn't Jewish. And he came for the Jews. He was focused on Israel to get Israel to accept him as their risen Savior once he would rise from the dead, so that Israel would take the gospel message to the world. He was focused on Israel. So since she was a Canaanite, Revelation, Matthew chapter 15, verse 23, he ignored her. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Jesus," what do you think they would say to her? Say to him, "Jesus, help her." But they didn't. They said, "Jesus, she's embarrassing us. Can't you get rid of her?" They said, "Send her away. She's crying out after us." But Jesus answered and said to them, what do you think he'd say to them? Would he rebuke them? "You guys need to be more loving." No, that's not what he did. He agreed with them, and he said, "I was only sent to Israel." In Matthew chapter 15, verse 24, Jesus said, "I was not sent except to Israel. I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And of course, he died. When he died, he shed his blood for all the world. Whoever will trust in him will be saved. But when he came, he was speaking to, and he was going to Israel. And he had some incidental contact with some who were not Jews, with Gentiles, but he had come for Israel. So he said, "I was only sent to Israel." And then she came and worshiped him, saying, "Lord, help me." And so, of course, then he's got to give in and help her, right? Then when she worshiped him and said, "Lord, help me." Verse 26, but he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." Wow. That's sort of harsh. Jesus was hardcore. And she wasn't a Jew. She was a Gentile. He was focused on bringing the gospel to Israel, and then Israel would take the gospel message to the world. That's what God had said Israel should do. The tragedy is that after Christ was crucified and then was raised from the dead, sadly, the nation of Israel rejected him. And they did not take the gospel message to the world. In fact, the 12 apostles, for the most part, they just hung out in Jerusalem. And according to the biblical record, they didn't even evangelize afterward. They just hung out in Jerusalem. Paul went all over the Roman Empire and evangelized. So, hey, we'll continue this as the week goes on and try to understand what it is about Christ's mission. Why did God send him just to the Jews, and how did he relate with the Gentiles? Invited to Denver Bible Church coming out Sunday. Now, stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-INYART, 1-800-836-9278. You're invited to call in to talk about whatever you'd like to in the news or the Bible. This is a Christian news call-in talk show. The Democrats are scared to death. They're scared to death. What are the Democrats scared about? They're scared to death that we will capture Osama bin Laden. That's what they're scared about. They are just petrified. That just cracks me up. They're petrified. About the only thing that scares them more than that is Howard Dean. They're really petrified of him. It's all so funny to see. It's like watching the Keystone Cops, watching the Democratic National Committee try to manage who's going to be their nominee. And let's see, a terrorist for Dean.com. No, we've talked about that already. Okay, you know, conservatives, right-wing, fanatic people like me, We've said basically all along that that Iraq and Saddam Hussein was a terrorist, and he sponsored terrorists, and he supported terrorists, and even if we can't connect him directly to 9/11, he's got links to terrorists everywhere you look. And so Al-Qaeda is not, you don't have to be baptized into Al-Qaeda. If you support Islamic terrorists, you're the enemy in the war on terror. And so, you know, if it smells like a terrorist and it looks like a terrorist and it's got a bad hair day like a terrorist, it's a terrorist. So at any rate, here is an article from the Weekly Standard. The Weekly Standard about Iraq's ties to Al-Qaeda. And this, you know what's interesting about this? It's not stressing current intelligence. It's looking back when Bill Clinton was president and we bombed a pharmaceutical factory in the Sudan. And why did we bomb it? Because we were hitting back at Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda because he just blew up two of our embassies in Africa. And we wanted to get back at him. So we blew up this pharmaceutical plant in the Sudan. For public school teachers listening right now, that's in Africa. And we knew at the time that Saddam Hussein had connections to this pharmaceutical plant and was funding it and even providing it chemicals to build nerve gas, to make nerve gas. So I'm going to bring you this article and see what you think. You may have caught this article. It's the date of the article is December 29th. Now, that's next week. But they do that. You know, Time Magazine, the current issue is like April 15th or something. They date it way ahead. So when you see it on a newsstand, you think it's current. Oh, April 15th. All right. So here's the Weekly Standard. The Clinton view of Iraq and Al-Qaeda ties. Are Al-Qaeda's links to Saddam Hussein's Iraq just a fantasy of right-wingers like Bob Inyart Live? No, they didn't say that. I just threw that in there. Hardly. The Clinton administration also warned the American public about Iraq-Al-Qaeda ties and defended its response to an Al-Qaeda terror attack by citing an Iraqi connection. All right, let's see here now. For nearly 2 years, starting in 1996, now that's long before September 11th, 2001, 5 years earlier, the CIA monitored a pharmaceutical plant in Khartoum, the city of Khartoum in the Sudan. And the plant is called Al-Shifa, the Al-Shifa pharmaceutical plant. The plant was known to have deep connections to Sudan's military industrial corporation. And the CIA had gathered intelligence on the relationship between Iraqi chemical weapons experts and the plant's top officials. The intelligence included information that several top chemical weapons specialists from Iraq had attended ceremonies to celebrate the plant's opening in 1996. Now, that's interesting, right? There's a pharmaceutical plant in the Sudan, and some of Saddam Hussein's top chemical weapons specialists were at the plant's opening. And also, interestingly, compelling, the National Security Agency, that's our NSA, had intercepted telephone calls between Iraqi scientists and the plant's general manager. And Iraq has admitted to having a $200,000 contract with that factory for goods under the Oil for Food program. And the goods that supposedly, the legal food products that supposedly were to be delivered were never delivered. So Saddam gave that factory $200,000 for something. It was a pharmaceutical plant. So whatever they were supposedly making, they never delivered any official food or medicines. And let's see here. CIA reporting from the mid-1990s showed Al-Qaeda financed firms that were violating UN sanctions on behalf of Iraq. Interesting, right? Back in the mid-1990s, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, was providing money to firms that were violating the UN sanctions for Iraq. And then in the spring of 1998, now you got to put your thinking cap on to understand this. But in 1998, the CIA gathered a soil sample, right? You send a tourist or somebody near this pharmaceutical plant, and they got within 60 feet of the plant's main gate. So that's like two telephone poles. And they scooped up some soil and brought the soil back. And in a laboratory, they analyzed it, and it showed high levels of a chemical that's known as EMPTA. And with this chemical, EMPTA, you can use it as, you don't have to, but it could be a key ingredient for nerve gas. You can make VX with it. And a senior intelligence official who briefed reporters at the time, back in 1998, he was asked, what country uses EMPTA? And he said, Iraq is the only country that we know of. Do you get the connection? We'll be right back.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Hey, are you raising a child, or do you have a grandkid who's being raised and you're trying to figure out how do you make them civil? How do you make them polite? How do you keep from pulling your hair out? Well, we have a neat little book here written by Michael and Debbie Pearl. It's called To Train Up a Child. And over the years, we've ordered many cases of this book, and we sell them every month. We've been doing this for years. They just keep going out the door. And we sell a copy of the book, To Train Up a Child, along with an audio tape that I put together titled Tyrant Dad. Tyrant Dad. About the more destructive our culture gets, the more a good dad looks like a tyrant dad, and how do you deal with that dynamic? So you might want to check this out if you're raising kids to train up a child. We've got that for $19.95, the book plus the audio tape. You can call us at 1-800-8-NYART, or you could go online to kgov.com, kgov.com, find out a little bit more about our child-raising pack here to train up a child and the audio tape. So that's 1-800-836-9278. We're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So imagine that. This is back in 1998 when the CIA took a soil sample from within 60 feet of the main gate of this plant in the Sudan. And this plant had ties with Osama bin Laden. And that's one of the main reasons we were interested in that plant. And then when we bombed the plant in August of 1998, the soil samples came in the spring of 1998, and we bombed the plant in August of 1998. And we bombed it to strike out against Al-Qaeda in a response to them attacking our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. And so we find this chemical in the soil, EMPTA, which is an ingredient for the deadly nerve agent VX. And a senior intelligence official at the time was briefing reporters. And this, again, this is according to an article just out by the Weekly Standard by Stephen Hayes. And the intelligence official was asked which countries, when they're making VX, which countries use EMPTA? In other words, there are different recipes you could use to make nerve agents. And his response was, quote, Iraq is the only country we're aware of. There are a variety of ways of making VX, a variety of recipes, and EMPTA is fairly unique. So there's an Iraq Al-Qaeda connection that goes back to the mid-90s, the late 90s, that the Clinton administration was not only convinced of, but sent cruise missiles into the Sudan as a result of it. So, and now there seems to be an increasing evidence and leaks and undeniable connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. But let's go to the phones in La Palm, California. Is that right? Dorothy, speak your mind. Hello, Dorothy. Well, I can't hear Dorothy. Okay, we're having a difficulty here. I'm putting her on hold, and we'll see what we can do about that. All right, I heard her through the wall, but not in the headsets. I wonder if those of you out in radio land could hear. Okay. All right, let's see here. Now, we might try to get Dorothy through, and you could try also. 1-800-836-9278. Try this again. Dorothy? Nope. Cannot hear Dorothy. So I don't think we're going to be able to take calls unless we got an engineer standing on duty, unless an engineer can go over to the system and see what's happening. All right. Okay. So anyway, back to the story. Now, so in August of 1998, the Clinton administration launched cruise missiles against Al-Qaeda targets in Afghanistan and the Sudan. Right? The Sudan was where Osama bin Laden was headquartered from 1992 through 1996. And among the targets they hit was the Al-Shifa plant, this pharmaceutical plant that was, we believed, making VX nerve gas with a chemical and a recipe supplied by Iraq. That's what it seemed to be. And Iraq gave them $200,000, supposedly under the Oil for Food program, but never got any food for the money. All right. So let's see what else here. Those missile strikes came 13 days. And by the way, that was also those missile strikes happened. That was wild. Remember that movie, Wag the Dog? Wag the Dog. It was a takeoff on the Clinton administration, a Hollywood movie where a young president was in the midst of a severe sex scandal. And to distract the public, he started a war. It was a bogus war. Well, I'll tell you about that Wag the Dog in a minute. First, we're going to try the phone here again. And Dorothy? No, poor Dorothy. Why don't we try to get Dorothy on the show tomorrow night? See, I could hear her through the wall. I can't hear her in my headsets. I threw the wall like she's a mouse a mile away. I'm going to have to put her on hold here and get Dorothy, try to get her back on the show tomorrow night. No, we don't get a lot of calls from California. That'd be fun. But we must have a demon in our phone system.
Come out! Come out!
Did that work? Let's get that guy from Theology Online down here. What's his username at Theology Online? I think it's Freak. He goes by the name Freak, this Christian guy at Theology Online. Now, I don't want you to think negatively of TheologyOnline.com because of this, but Freak is a regular poster there, and he specializes at casting demons out of things, or at least out of people. But I wonder if he would cast the demon out of our phone system. It's probably... All right, let's see. So anyway, let's get back to this. So now, Wag the Dog is this Hollywood movie, Dustin Hoffman, whoever was in it, about this young president who was in such a despicable sex scandal that he started a war to distract the public from his scandal. So now... this is in August of 1998, and if I recall, here's a couple details. I might get this a little bit wrong, but pretty much right. I might have a little bit of the detail wrong, but pretty much this is the way it happened. The presidential press corps, the press that travels with the president, Boston? I think they were in Boston. Or Martha's Vineyard, with the president, and the president was there for whatever business or vacation, and they took the afternoon off as a group to go watch a movie, and they went to see Wag the Dog as a group, and while they're watching the movie, well into the movie, all their pagers go off at the same time. They all got paged by their editors. And they all go out to the lobby and with their cell phones, call up their editors, and they find out that Bill Clinton, who was right in the middle of the Monica Lewinsky sex scandal, in fact, that was a significant day. I think it was August 20th or something, 1998, had to do with Monica's, maybe the deposition that Bill Clinton gave about Monica Lewinsky was going to be aired that night or something like that. Something like that. They found out that Bill Clinton had just shot cruise missiles at Afghanistan and the Sudan, and they felt that they were in the Twilight Zone. Because here, Bill Clinton was in this sex scandal that was so serious, it led to his impeachment. And now all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's bombing the Sudan and Afghanistan, which was so strikingly, so so much like Wag the Dog. They thought they were in a Twilight Zone. It was unbelievable. And at the time, Bill Clinton had announced that this was the beginning of our war against Al-Qaeda and terror, something like that. And I remember we were on the air then. We first went on the air in 1991. We've been on five nights a week for 12 years, going on 13 years. And I remember saying it seemed obvious to me that a main motivator for Bill Clinton, that he probably wouldn't have done this except that he was wanted to distract us from Monica Lewinsky. And I remember saying, this is not the beginning of our war. This is the end. I remember saying that right off the bat. This is the end. We're not going to fight a war against terrorism. This is a one-time shot because it's a convenient distraction. And it's not that it was inappropriate for us to go after Al-Qaeda. It was 100% appropriate. But that was it. It was just the make. It was like a Hollywood maneuver. It was a distraction. And at the time, it's interesting that I recall hearing, you know, how the media, they have shows where they talk about the media and the reporting of the news. And I remember hearing in the mainstream media that the majority of reporters believed that Bill Clinton killed people in Afghanistan and the Sudan, shot those cruise missiles at targets primarily because of Monica Lewinsky, not primarily because of the evidence or national defense. I remember hearing that. And what went through my mind at the time and many times since was, and especially when we went to Israel a couple years ago during the current intifada, what went through my mind is if a majority of American journalists who are liberal and vote Democratic by what, 90% almost? If a majority of them believed Bill Clinton killed people in Afghanistan and the Sudan to cover up his own sex scandal, by the way, the movie Wag the Dog, that was really big in the Arab world. Bootlegged, of course, but big. If a majority of liberal reporters in America believe Bill Clinton bombed these countries to cover up a sex scandal, what percentage of Arabs in the Arab world believed he did that? And I'd say you'd have to come down somewhere around 100%. Somewhere around there. Of course you would. And, you know, it would have been nice for some conservative Republican leader in the Senate to ask, where's the follow-up? Bill Clinton said this is the beginning on our war on terror against those who blew up our embassies in Africa, in Kenya and Tanzania. And remember those attacks? They killed hundreds of people. And some Americans, a handful of Americans were killed. Hundreds of blacks in Africa were killed. And thousands were injured, thousands. There were huge explosions. Demolished these two big office buildings, one in Kenya. And we have friends that have spent a couple years, our good friends have spent a couple years in Kenya as Christian missionaries. Then we have extended church family friends who've spent many years there. About 5,000 people were injured, 250 people killed. We'll be back right after this. Bob Inyard here. Welcome to those of you tuning in via KGOV, KGOV.com. Hey, we're pretty excited that about 2,500 people a week tune in via the internet. That's pretty neat. Well, 2,500 unique visitors to KGOV.com. So you're one of them. We want to welcome you to the show. And hello to those of you in Denver listening, or Colorado, or sometimes the signal goes beyond the Front Range, depending on the atmospheric circumstances. But welcome to Bob Inyard Live, broadcast on KLTT 670 AM. And for those of you listening on the radio, if you miss a show that you wanted to catch, especially one where the phone actually worked, well, then you can tune in on the web, look for our archives, or every day the show is at kgov.com, kgov.com. Also, there's a link there to talk about the show. And you could click on that link and get to a forum on the internet at theologyonline.com, which is specifically about the Bob Inyard Live programs. So you are cordially invited to come on out to KGOV. You could check out our store there. It's easy, KGOV, KGOV.com. Why does it start with K? Well, you know, radio stations west of the Mississippi and TV stations, they all start with K. And east of the Mississippi, they all start with W, like WABC in New York and LA, KABC. Well, this is KGOV, KGOV.com, because conservative Christians are the only ones who really know how to govern. All right, we're back. Bob Inyard Live, 1-800. Oh, the phone doesn't work. 1-800-836-9278, and you could talk to our call screener. And I hope you enjoy yourself. He has nothing to do tonight, poor guy. All right. Now, we're not going to pay him for the whole show, right? Just for the first 13 minutes? The call screener has to make sure the phone works. No, that's not his job. Whose job is that? We never assigned that job to anyone. See, that's the problem. All right. So Bill Clinton is in the sex scandal with Monica Lewinsky. He bombs Afghanistan and the Sudan. And he does it because, now check this out, he does it because of the link between Iraq and Osama bin Laden. At least he knew Osama bin Laden was supporting this pharmaceutical plant. And we found Iraqi chemicals and a bogus Iraqi contract with the plant. And Iraq's senior chemical weapons specialists are at the opening celebration of the plant, and leading Iraqi scientists, our NSA, the National Security Agency, intercepted telephone calls between Iraqi scientists and the plant's general manager. So there's some basic connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda regarding terrorist attacks, the desire to make weapons of mass destruction, and where they were supporting one another. Now, if there were no Iraq-Al-Qaeda connection, if there were none, it was still necessary to destroy Saddam Hussein and his government. It was necessary in the war on terror. On September 11th, when we were attacked 2 years ago, I was on the air with the Information Radio Network, in fact, with their founder, and Larry Bates, and we were talking about the attack and who might be responsible. And we identified on the air that it was most likely Al-Qaeda, that it couldn't have been the Palestinian terrorists. They were incapable of it, but it was likely Al-Qaeda that was holed up in Afghanistan with the Taliban. And we called for, immediately I called for, personally, and then we put it on tape the next day and did it on a seminar in Indiana that weekend and put it in a pamphlet that we printed many thousands of copies of, that we needed to destroy the governments of Afghanistan and Iraq. That had to be two of our first and most significant responses to 9/11, because Iraq was a terrorist government. And if we're going to have a war on terror, we have to teach our enemies that terrorism is a losing tactic. That if a government supports terrorism, that government will be destroyed. And what we put in this pamphlet, that there are copies of it on the web right now, Attack on America, a Christian Response, that other countries would be deterred, they would be deterred if we destroyed the governments that supported terrorism. So now we have Gaddafi in Libya, right, voluntarily turning himself in regard to his nuclear weapons program and his weapons of mass destruction programs. So, all right. All right, so that pharmaceutical plant that we hit with six Tomahawk missiles in the Sudan, for the public school teachers tuning in, the Sudan, that's still in Africa. Still in Africa. Hasn't moved in the last 37 minutes. But the plant is no longer in Africa. The plant was destroyed by our six Tomahawk missiles, that Al-Shifa plant. Well, ABC News reported on August 25th. Now, this is not after 9/11. This is not on some right-wing program trying to, like Bob and Your Live, trying to make a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden in Iraq. This is on ABC News, 1998, August 25th, 1998. John McQuethy reporting, their national security correspondent. And I'm going to quote to you what he said. Make believe you're listening to ABC News. Well, don't make believe that. That might gross you out. ABC, anything but Christ. Just that, well, here's what you would have heard if you were listening to ABC on August 25th, 1998. Before the pharmaceutical plant was reduced to rubble by American cruise missiles, the CIA was secretly gathering evidence that ended up putting the facility on America's target list. Intelligence sources say their agents clandestinely gathered soil samples outside the plant and found, quote, strong evidence of a chemical compound called EMPTA, a compound that has only one known purpose, to make VX nerve gas. The U.S. had been suspicious for months, partly because of Osama bin Laden's financial ties to the pharmaceutical plant, but also because of strong connections to Iraq. Sources say the U.S. had intercepted phone calls from the plant to a man in Iraq who runs that country's chemical weapons program. Now, I don't have here in this story the name of that man. I don't know if it was Chemical Ali. Back then, nobody knew Chemical Ali. Nobody here knew. In Iraq, plenty of people had been killed by him. I don't know if that was him or not. He might not have been the one who ran the program. He was probably the one who gassed thousands of civilians in genocidal murders that liberals like Alan Combs, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, have a high tolerance for. Right? When liberals take a fit about us going into Iraq, even though the New York Times has admitted that Saddam Hussein was responsible for killing about 1 million people, or for the violent deaths of about 1 million people. And they say, liberals say, yeah, but we shouldn't have done it alone. Well, we went with dozens of countries. We didn't go alone. Yeah, well, France wouldn't go with us. Well, who gives a rip if France wouldn't go with us? You know, on our way to Baghdad, we could have bombed the Eiffel Tower, but we didn't have enough bombs available. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. But who cares that France, if you've got a murderous tyrant who's murdered a million people and we have the ability to stop him, do we let France veto us and say, well, we can't stop a murderous tyrant because France is doing business with him and making a lot of money off of him? And so we're not going to do it? And liberals have a higher threshold. They're more tolerant of mass murdering tyrants. And conservatives see more clearly, more moral clarity, and they say it's good to stop a mass murdering tyrant if you can do it. And if other people don't want to help you, that's okay. First stop the mass murdering tyrant and then deal with the morons who said you shouldn't have done it. So at any rate, this is ABC News back in 1998 making the connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. That's pretty interesting. I did not know that story until the Weekly Standard just put out this article. Let's see, what else here? The senior intelligence officials who briefed reporters at the time, this is back 5 years ago, laid out the collaboration between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Quote, we knew there were ties, fuzzy ties, between bin Laden and the pharmaceutical plant, but strong ties between him and Sudan, and strong ties between the plant and Sudan, and strong ties between the plant and Iraq. Although this official was careful not to oversell bin Laden ties to the plant, other Clinton officials told reporters that the plant's general manager lived in a villa owned by Osama bin Laden. That's just like too cozy. That's too cozy. If I agree to help you murder 50,000 people, will you give me a discount on my rent? Sure. The plant manager's name, you know these Arabic names you just can't quite pronounce? Mohammed Idrul Mohammed. Whatever his name is. All right, several Clinton administration national security officials told the Weekly Standard last week, now this is fast-forwarding to 2003, that they still stand by the intelligence. Daniel Benjamin, director of counterintelligence on the National Security Council back then, said, well, we'll be right back. Bob Inyard here. Hey, we've got a neat catalog filled with how many titles are in this catalog of ours? You can't even count it. Have to spend your whole weekend counting. We've got Bible study albums and literature, videos, subscriptions, classics. For example, in our literature, we have The Plot, a 330-page overview, an unpublished manuscript, an overview of the Bible. What does this catalog say? The Plot, unpublished manuscript, Bob's life work. The overview is the key to the Bible's details. It's so much fun to study the overview of the Bible. And then when you come across the verse, a story, a chapter, a book, you get it. When you get the overview, then the details make a lot more sense. Usually Christians start with the details and then they can't figure out why they're confused. You can't start with the details. It's like That's not how you do it. You start with an overview and you work in. You don't start with a microscope and you try to figure out how do you get from Denver to Chicago. Let's see. I'm headed to Schaumburg. I got this microscope. And it's, you know, it goes up to 1,000 times magnification. Why can't I find my way out of my front door? So with the plot, it's sort of like turning it around and looking the other way and getting an overview, the big picture. And you see, oh, Chicago, for those public school teachers tuning in right now, is in another state. And I actually have to get in a car and drive there. So anyway, that's what the plot manuscript does. It helps you to get an overview of the Bible so that then you can understand the details. So you can get it online at KGov or call us. All right, I violated one of our own rules. We're not supposed to make fun of public school teachers more than twice in one program. And I did it three times. Four times? First time I violated that rule since the Pumpkin Show. Back when we were on TV, through the whole hour, I said that we had a studio audience of, for the first time ever, made up completely of public school teachers. And we often had studio audiences. And so I, you know, greeted them during the show. And at the very end of the show, the camera, the director told one of the cameramen to pan to the audience. And it was all pumpkins with faces drawn on them. And I had said during the show that it was actually a bit of a smarter group of public school teachers than at a normal school gathering. And it turned out to be pumpkins. You know, I thought, what did I know? I was told they were public school teachers. So I just, you know, you don't doubt everything people tell you. So anyway, that, and from then until now, it's been, what, it's been 8 years. 8 years since we violated that rule, and now we did it again. All right, mark the tape. December 22nd, 2003, violated the rule again. Once every 8 years. That's not bad. But that means I should have a few freebies before the end of the show. No, I shouldn't. Okay, so the Weekly Standard, they asked Daniel Benjamin, who was the back in the 1990s, late 1990s, he was on the National Security Council. He was the director of counterterrorism. And he said that any president, in responding to the Weekly Standard last week, he said any president with that evidence would have come to the same decision of Al-Qaeda's intention and the chemical weapons that were being built. And so they're still defending the view that was that they came to at the time, which view is exactly, although that was different evidence, what conservative Christians and other conservatives have said, that Saddam Hussein was a terrorist. He supported terrorists. He had a terrorist government. That he himself was a weapon of mass destruction. And that he should be destroyed. His government should be destroyed. All right. So then the Weekly Standard asks, they ask, wouldn't the bombing of a plant with well-documented connections to Iraq's chemical weapons program, right? We bombed a plant connected to Iraq in an effort to strike back at Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda terrorist network. So they say, wouldn't that suggest that the Clinton administration and national security officials believed that Iraq was working with Al-Qaeda? Of course, that's what the Clinton administration believed. And all right, so let's see here. So anyway, liberals today don't want to connect those dots and da-da-da. That's all right, so that's that story, and I think it's interesting. It's a piece of history the vast majority of Americans will never become aware of, and especially those who have their fingers in their ears and their eyes closed and say Iraq was not sponsoring terrorism and there was no connection with Al-Qaeda. All right. Now, how about this? Is this true? This is a shocker. I don't know if this is true, but how about, you know, Yasser Arafat? Who's Yasser Arafat? He's the head of the Palestinians in the West Bank. And he's the father of modern terrorism. And conservative Christians have been especially upset with George W. Bush and other conservatives for defending Arafat. And we've said that, you know, Arafat should be killed as a terrorist. It'd be like protecting Osama bin Laden. What's the point of it? So now the Drudge Report has reported on an article in Israel by a major newspaper, Yediyah Ahronah. Yediyah Ahronah, a daily newspaper in Israel, that George W. Bush told an Israeli journalist that, quote, we must get rid of Yasser Arafat. Now, that's interesting. I'm waiting to hear. Has anyone out there heard whether the Bush administration has confirmed or denied this? Or even if they would neither confirm it nor deny it, that'd be interesting. But if they confirmed it, denied it, or neither confirmed it or denied it, I'd like to know. But this is interesting here, that if Bush, this major newspaper in Israel, is saying that Bush said we must get rid of Arafat. And his comments came in an exchange with the newspaper's correspondent during Christmas drinks at a party in Washington. That was a few hours after, remember the speech last week by Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon? That was on Thursday, in which he said if the Palestinians don't get with the program, then Israel will unilaterally disengage from the West Bank and Gaza. And he said, and the Palestinians will get not as good a deal as if they stop the terrorism and come to a negotiated settlement. But terrorists, you know, they get a thirst for blood, and they're not going to stop, no matter how much Israel offered the Palestinians, which even the Palestinians, you know, that whole story. Well, when our phones work on a future show, we'll have to talk more about that. But the Palestinians, they claim that Israel, now do I have that right? The Palestinians claim that Israel took their land. Is that how that works? The Palestinians say it's their land because Palestine belonged to the Palestinians. But there were no Palestinians. In fact, the Arabs in Israel, in the West Bank, in Gaza, they don't even say Palestine. They don't have a P in their alphabet. They say Palestine, like a B. And you'd think if you had a country, you would name it something that you could pronounce. Wouldn't you think? It's like Deutschland, if the German language had no D letter. Be weird. And then what you call your country Deutschland for? You Deutsch you? It'd be weird. But, the Palestinian people, they're Arabs. And they never had a country that Israel took there. If they had a country there, what was the king? Before Israel took the country in 1948, who was the Palestinian king or president or prime minister? Who? There was none. What was the name of the country? There was none. What was their constitution? There was none. What was their currency? Every country has a currency, right? You have your bills, your coins with your president's face on it and the year. What was the Palestinian currency? There was none. There was no Palestinian state. There was no Palestinian state. The Jews could go back 3,000 years to when King David established his throne in Jerusalem in, what was that, 1004 B.C. That's a long time ago, 3,000 years ago. And they lived there for many centuries, had an empire. It was a kingdom. It was divided by a civil war. And the northern 10 tribes were taken away by the Assyrians and assimilated, mostly. And the southern tribes, Judah, were taken captivity by the Babylonians. And then when the empire of the Medes and the Persians overcame the Babylonian Empire and subsumed it or absorbed the Babylonian Empire, then a lot of those Jews ended up in Persia, which is Iran. And so then a number of the Jews were allowed to return to Israel and begin to rebuild their capital, Jerusalem, their temple. And there was a return. And then the Jews were in the land for hundreds of years until King Herod began rebuilding Jerusalem and the temple. And Christ was born there. And in AD 70, the Jews were, well, utterly wiped out for the most part as far as their culture in Israel by the Romans and General Titus, who sacked, destroyed Jerusalem, and the Jews were finally scattered all over the world, and they remained scattered for almost 2,000 years until May 14th, 1948, when Israel was reestablished as a nation after, what, 100 years or so of effort of Jews to return to the land, and after World War II and Hitler and the Germans, who had slaughtered about 6 million Jews, give or take a few. And they said, enough is enough. We are going to return to our homeland. And Britain, who had control of that territory, agreed, and the United Nations agreed. And they said, all right, we're all going to recognize that Israel is going to return to their ancient homeland. And the Arab states around said, Britain's leaving this land, we're going to take it. We're going to destroy the Jews. And they lost. When they attacked, the day Israel became a nation, they attacked five Arab countries. And many of the Arabs who lived there in the land fled with the incoming Arab armies. They fled. And Israel defeated the aggressors. And then the Jews were blamed for the Arabs who were thereby displaced. The Arabs that were rooting for their brothers in arms to destroy the Jews and push them into the sea. So Israel, is Israel a perfect country? Nowhere near it. I'd say they're the most evil nation in the world next to America, from my perspective, because the more you know and you're evil, the more you're accountable. And next to America and our Christianity, they knew Moses. So they're evil, we're evil, the whole world's evil. We need Jesus Christ. So if he doesn't come back by tomorrow, tune in tomorrow night. This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.